Hi, welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. On this week's episode, we have our weekly check-ins. We have an interview with pediatrician and mom, Dr. Mona Amin, from the acclaimed Instagram handle Peds Doc Talk. And we have our weekly BFPs and BFNs. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 167. Hey there, Laura.
Hey.
How's it going? Last week, everything was coming up, Laura. Is everything still coming up, Laura?
Yeah, it's actually been a pretty great week again. Yay.
Woo-hoo.
So this week was Augie's first week of preschool.
Ah, awesome.
I know, the little sweetheart. So if you recall, we picked the posh preschool, mostly because it was available. And he started going only 2 days a week. So he went Tuesday and Thursday this week. And, you know, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect because he has never in his life gone somewhere else and just like been left there. You know, when we've had babysitters, they've come to our house. When my mom's taking care of him, it's been at our house. You know, like he's never just like gone somewhere and I've like left him there and he's been by himself.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. And it was super weird for all of us, I think. Maybe more for me than for him. It was really good, though. So leading up to school, you know, we had been trying to talk about it and read books about it and, you know, just generally trying to be emotionally prepared for going to school. But it was all kind of abstract for him and for us, really, especially because we couldn't like go into the school together because of COVID. So like, I've never stepped foot in the school. He's never stepped foot in the school. We've done a virtual tour. And it was one of those things where it's like, okay, so Tuesday rolls around and we just walk him to the front and like say, see you later, kid.
Oh my God. Did you have the opportunity to meet the teacher or anything?
Not in person. So they sent a video to introduce the teachers to the students like 2 weeks prior, I think. They sent everyone a video and the teachers weren't wearing their masks in the video, which I think was good because otherwise they weren't going to be able to see them without their masks on, right?
Yeah.
So we watched that video, I want to say 80 times.
Over and over.
He just wanted to see the video. He kept saying, I want to see my classroom. I want to see my teachers. And I was like, okay, this is good. Like, I know he probably also wants to milk it for screen time, but at least he's getting prepared. I have that video memorized.
Oh my gosh.
But I think it worked because we get these updates throughout the day when he's at school on this app called Bright Wheel.
Yeah, we used to use that at Elle's old preschool.
I think it's pretty universal, like preschool check-in and update app. And this school is pretty good about sending updates. So they sent a bunch of pictures to us of him like in circle reading time and outdoor sensory play time and it seemed like he had fun. I mean,
that's good, but you're jumping ahead here. Like drop off is the big thing for these kids. Like how did it go? How did he handle it?
You know, it's funny. I guess I'm jumping ahead because it was like a non-event for us.
Wow.
Like we were all worried about it. You know, we all packed up as a family. I got Sebastian in his car seat and we all went together for the first day of drop off, you know. And Augie, it's interesting, even though he'd been watching those videos and we had been reading books and stuff, he kept having this refrain like for the week leading up to school where he'd be like, I'm scared of school. And we'd be like, oh, you're scared of school? Well, that's totally normal. That's totally fine. You know, I'm always scared of new things. You know, we tried to do all the stuff you do where you talk to them about how their feelings are valid and yada, yada, yada.
Emotions, yada, yada.
Emotions, whatever. But I think he started realizing that we paid a lot of attention to him when he would say stuff like that. So he'd just be like playing and then all of a sudden be like, I'm scared of school. It's like, do you just want cuddles right now? Like, what's going on? But so we were worried that he was going to be like, oh, so scared of school. But we went and did the like socially distanced, you know, everyone standing 6 feet apart drop off and handed him over to his teacher. And I was expecting like a little bit of clinginess, a little bit of crying. Nope. He just kind of, he looked a little nervous hard to tell with the mask on, and disappeared into the school. And next thing I know, I'm getting updates from his teachers and, you know, he ate his snack, he ate his lunch, he's playing with toys, blah, blah, blah. And seemed totally fine.
That's awesome. Yay. Yeah.
And after his first day, he said he wanted to go back. Like the first thing he said when Corey picked him up, because I couldn't come pick him up too because Sebastian was napping. Apparently the first thing he said is, I want to go back to school. So.
Aw, yeah. Yay.
Yeah. Judy did not do at school.
Huh. Nap.
Yeah.
Okay.
No napping. So.
Oh, well, shucks.
I think that's over. My like last ditch hope of him getting peer pressure to nap at school is like, that was it. That was my last hope for the nap. And I got this hilarious message from his teacher. It wasn't intended to be hilarious. It just was hilarious to me. That was like, so are there any tips or tricks to help Augie get comfortable for his nap? He seems to be really upset and not wanting to nap. And so I wrote back this essay that was like, yeah, I don't think he's napping anymore. He doesn't do it for us at home. He's good with quiet time. So,
oh, man. Yeah. When you told me there would be older kids at the school too, like 4 year olds, I was like, ooh, that's going to take away from the peer pressure of napping because a lot of kids that age don't. So if he sees some kids playing and some little kids sleeping, he's going to choose to play, I bet.
Yeah. That was the nail in the coffin, final nail in the coffin for napping, I think. So I think we're officially done with naps, like done. No more trying here and there. No, just fuck it. I guess he's just a kid who gives up his nap at 2.5, whatever. Someone send me alcohol.
I'll get that right to your door. Hopefully it'll be a weight off of everyone's shoulders of pushing and trying for something that's not going to happen. So maybe
that's
it'll
true.
Be a good thing.
That's a good reframing. Thank you. So yeah, so Augie's had a great week with school. Very excited to keep that going. And with Sebastian, we're just finishing up the second week of sleep training and it continues to be a success. Honestly, it's not even really training at this point. Like I'd call it past tense. He has been sleep trained.
Wow.
Because we put him down, he may cry for a minute or two, and then he goes to sleep, and he sleeps through the night.
What?
Completely.
Oh my God. So how are you feeling with extra sleep these days?
It's like a miracle. Although here's something that I actually think is interesting. Paradoxically, I feel more tired this week. And I think it's because there's this thing that happens supposedly when you're like super sleep deprived, where you're like adrenaline is just racing at all times because you're basically in fight or flight mode trying to maintain your life, right?
Yeah.
And when you start getting more sleep, your adrenaline isn't like pumping all the time. You don't have to be quite as alert, right? Like your body isn't like in fight or flight anymore. And for that reason, apparently you can feel more tired for a short period of time. This is what I remember from the last time I did this. So this week I have been like a little zombified, like walking around just being like, why am I so tired? Like I want to take naps. And I'm like, but I'm getting more sleep than I've gotten in at least 6 months. But I think that's why. I think it's like the adrenaline crash.
Yeah, that makes sense. When the kids wake me up at night or wake me up super early or I just don't sleep well, the next day I'm always strangely energized. And I think it's the adrenaline. So I can understand how you might feel more tired when you actually sleep well and there's nothing to kind of stress you out.
Yeah, I'm curious how long it'll take for me to get back to like baseline. So we'll see. We'll see.
Well, that's all good news. Yay.
We are chugging along. So that's it for me this week. Another good week. How about you, Shauna? What's up with you and your girls?
We've had a big week over here as well. Definitely have some stuff to talk about.
Oh, good.
Our big news this week is that Elle started kindergarten.
What? Like, that's real school. That's not, I pay for preschool stuff. That's real public school.
Yes, it was the first day of her educational journey, her true educational journey. In a way, I felt kind of sad for her. I was like, wow, you've got a lot of years ahead of you. But, you know, on the other hand, like, I loved school and it was great.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to just learn so much and thrive. So I'm really excited for her.
So tell us, I remember we were discussing whether she was going to go to the neighborhood school or the charter school. And I think you ended up at the charter school, right?
Yes, we're going to a charter school nearby. We got in. It's just a pure lottery, just a pure drawing. Doesn't depend where you live. If you get lucky enough to get in, you do. And we did. And so we're like, well, sure, we'll give it a try. And it's a new campus. They just built a new building and everything, and it's been under construction. So this whole time I've like driven her by it and like, here's your new school. And it's like, you know, got construction fences around it, and I can't tell what it looks like. And we're just like, I'm sending you to a construction zone, I guess. Coupled with the pandemic and not being able to like do any kind of in-person tours or orientation. Mm-hmm. Orientation was online, you know, not meeting her teacher. So it all was just like, I'm just sending her into this black hole of who knows what. It was very strange, but really tried to just embrace the weirdness of it and be okay with it. And same thing, the whole family packed up on her first day. She had her new backpack and her water bottle and her all her new masks and everything. She was all excited, and we walked up to drop her off. And somehow they had managed to completely finish the construction on the school, except for the parking lot. So the school was like open and fresh, and like everything looked like a good normal school at this point. So I was like, yay. And we wait in a big long line to drop her off because there's like a million people dropping off their kids. And I'm getting like so nervous waiting to drop her off. And she was so confident and so self-assured and gave us a hug. And we just let her go like at the gate. Like we can't walk her in. We can't go meet the teacher or anything. And just it's like she just went to a teacher's aide who's like, what's your name? And what teacher do you have? And walked over to the teacher, and she just walked right in and waved bye. And I think Cece took it harder than Elle did, honestly.
Oh.
She's like, can I go with her? I want to go. And, you know, where's she going? And was very confused by why we were dropping her little playmate off somewhere that she wasn't getting to go.
Well, Cece does not remember a time when Elle was like anywhere but home all the time with her, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
For Elle, she remembers going to school, probably, right?
Uh-huh.
But Cece's like, this is completely new.
Yes.
How did she handle being at home alone?
Yeah, at first it was really weird. She seemed out of sorts, but pretty quickly she kind of got into the swing of things. I mean, honestly, we got home and like Steve and I both had a meeting, or you know, and Cece's like, can I play a game? And we're like, okay, sure. Like, here's your pad for 30 minutes. And then she's just like happy as a clam. So it ended up being okay. And, you know, she's gone a couple days now. And I think Cece likes the one-on-one time at home. You know, it's there's less drama. They get along really well as sisters, but naturally there's like some bickering and like, you know, wanting to each have the same toy. And sometimes it escalates a little bit. And it just is calmer, and she just gets more attention from us and stuff. So I think she likes it. Yeah.
I guess I've never thought about the flip of that. Like, she never got to have you and Steve kind of to herself. I mean, she did before the pandemic, but she doesn't remember what it was like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess that's the real silver lining to your sister being gone. So what hours is she at school? Like, is it a full day?
She does 8 to 2:15.
Oh, wow. So that's a pretty long day.
Yeah, it's a pretty long day. And I picked her up the other day and walked her back to her car. And, you know, I pick her up and I give her a hug. And I'm like, I miss you. And, you know, oh, I love you. I'm so happy to see you. And we walk to the car, and she gets in the back seat to start getting in her car seat. And I go up front to turn on the car to get the AC going. And from the back seat, I hear, I missed you. I missed you, missed you, missed you so much. I love you. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so sweet. I'm like, honey, I missed you too. I love you. And then I look back and realize she's talking to her stuffed dog that she had left in the back seat. I was embarrassed. So I don't know how much she misses me while she's at school, but she definitely misses her stuffed dog.
Well, at least she misses something from home.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness. But that's going well. And my update about Cece is that holy moly, she is becoming a threenager.
Really?
Have we talked about this before, the phrase threenager?
I don't think we've talked about it. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, the threenager situation that your three-year-old acts like a teenager.
Yeah.
But she's not three yet.
She's not three. She's getting a head start. She recently went through a leap or something. I don't know. She kind of had a rough, stormy period. She was very needy for a little bit, and then just it cleared up and she was cheery and she had like an expanded vocabulary. She had more energy and a better idea of how to manipulate me and Steve. It's like it all came together in her brain. And it reminds me of how Augie was ordering you to like lay down on the dirty floor, right? Mm-hmm. It's like this sense of like, oh, I can, you know, order my parents around now. She plays Floor is Lava with Al. And so she really grasps this idea now. And she like demands that I play it all the time. She's like, Floor is Lava, Floor is Lava, Mama. You know, because I'm like, I don't know, standing on the wood instead of a rug. Who even knows the rules?
Yeah.
So she demands that and she's like, I want milk now, and just like wants everything now. And the other day I was talking and she's like, Mama, shh. So she is so sassy and so all about telling me what to do. Whew, she's coming in hot.
You know, I'm laughing because Augie's doing a lot of similar things. And you know what's funny is that my mom was visiting, right? And she was like, he's gotten so bossy. And I was like, you're right. He is very bossy.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized, like, bossy is a word you can't use with little girls, right? It's not okay to use anymore. But with little boys, it's sort of like, okay, he's bossy. He's bossy as shit. Like,
So what can I say about Cece besides she's bossy as shit? Because that is like what she's like right now. She's bossing me around.
You got a hashtag girl boss there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Definitely.
Oh, man. I mean, but maybe part of the problem is that we look at the term bossy as negative for some reason, which, you know, it just means that she wants to be in charge. It sounds like that's exactly what she wants. To be in charge of everyone and everything.
Yes. And I appreciate that. It's good leadership quality. She's really developing her leadership skills right now at age 2.5.
Do you know what I find hard to do is like, I find it hard not to laugh because, I mean, he's being annoying, you know, and bossy. But also it's hilarious because he's this little thing with like a little voice. And he's being so bossy. And so I laugh and lately he's been like, don't laugh, don't laugh. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, baby. I can't help it. You're funny.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's really hard. I'm like, especially when she demands that I get her things now, I have really have to swallow it and be like, okay, just try to teach her to say please instead of now.
They're funny.
But
they're funny.
She's still cute and sweet and very fun. Really becoming a threenager. Her personality is really coming out. It's cool.
I feel like she was really born with a very distinct and strong personality.
Yeah. Yeah. She really was, huh? She was a loud, I'm here, I'm determined. She was always so determined to do all the things she couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, sometimes I wonder if that's part of her frustration that she has sometimes, that she's got this big, strong will and energy, but just in such a tiny package and not all the skills and stuff yet to communicate that and really be herself. So it's cool to see some of that coming out now that I think she can really express.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about this threenager because she sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, yes. I'm sure I will keep everyone updated. But that's it for me this week. Why don't we take a break and come back with our special segment, which I'm very excited about.
Let's do it.
Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids. But you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why Storyworth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give Storyworth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted Storyworth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at oneskin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP. Okay, we are back, and our special segment this week is an interview with Dr. Mona, pediatrician, mom, and Enfamil's infant development expert. You may know her from her very popular Instagram, Peds Doc Talk, or she also has a podcast of the same name. Welcome, Dr. Mona. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Dr. Mona, welcome to our show. We are big fans of yours, but I would love for you to tell us a little about yourself.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. So yes, I am Dr. Mona Amin. I'm a pediatrician and mother, and I started Peds Doc Talk because I'm just so passionate about informing new parents on how to fuel their baby's development, health in those early years, right? I really go back to those early years. Right now, I'm focusing so much on the first 2 years of life. And I partnered with Enfamil NeuroPro, who brought us together, because we're looking at ways to educate families on how to look at nutrition as well as the baby's environment for development. So when we talk about those early years, and I know we're going to get into so many questions about those early years, but how can we, you know, make the baby's environment impactful in terms of developing their cognitive development, their growth, their motor skills, their social and communication skills. It's so important to maximize those early years and the windows of opportunity we have when baby's brain and immune system is being developed. And so I like to educate families on how to do that in a low stress way. We don't have to put so much pressure on ourselves, and society tends to do that. But that's why I'm here. And I'm just so glad that we could connect today.
And so we just want to dive right in because we want to, like, get your knowledge into our veins.
I love it.
Tell us what you know. So our first real question that we have for you is, you talk a lot about building confidence in new moms and, like, in dealing with your baby and dealing with your own postpartum self. And what advice do you have for new moms who might ask themselves, like, how do I know if I'm making the right decision for my baby?
This is a great question. And again, I'm just so happy to be here. I love talking about development. I love talking about motherhood, how it relates to infant development. And I look at it as the baby is given to us and we are the mom or caregiver for that child. So everything that that child goes through is almost like a learning experience to say, you know what, this was really difficult, but I got through it. You know, that motto of we survive 100% of the days we've lived through, you know, it's true here, is that anytime you're doubting yourself, I really want mothers to remember that that baby was given to you. You know, whether you got pregnant, whether you adopted, however that baby came into your life, that baby is meant for you. And now you are responsible for that baby. And it's hard because some mothers sometimes feel like they don't have that innate maternal instinct. You know, I talk to a lot of moms and they're like, I don't know. What if I miss something? You know, what if I don't know the answer? And, you know, I'm kind of here as a pediatrician on social to kind of remind moms of what they do know. Also, they don't know everything, but what can I fill the gaps in on? You know, what can I say? Well, this is what you know. This is what innately you may feel. And if you're not feeling this, let's kind of fill in the gaps and make sure you feel more confident as a mom, because confidence really helps you. You know, confidence helps you feel less judged because, you know, there's going to be judgment. But if you're confident in your actions, then you're going to feel like, you know what? I don't care what people say because I know what I'm doing. I know it makes sense for my baby. And that's why I'm kind of here to help mothers, fathers, but, you know, really that primary caregiver, which tends in society to be mom, not always, but to help them understand, you know what? You are doing right. Let me explain to you why you're doing it right based on infant development and what I know as a general pediatrician.
I love that. And I love how so much of your Instagram and your podcast really help reduce anxieties in first-time moms and parents. It's such a wonderful resource for parents. And we have a couple questions that we think might help our listeners feel more at ease if we get some answers from you as a wonderful expert and resource. So one thing we're wondering about is, what's your stance on sleep training? Should new moms feel guilty for considering sleep training? Or does research support the idea that sleep training and allowing babies to cry is detrimental? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, this is such a great question. I actually recently posted about this on social and it got some mixed reviews, mostly positive and supportive. I am pro sleep training, but I'm also pro whatever a parent wants to do. So there is a culture out there in parenting on social that you must sleep train is one camp. And then there's another camp that says, well, you can't sleep train because it's harmful and the baby will feel abandoned. And I really don't want us to go to either extreme, right? Because we have to understand that it really is a combination of a parent and their philosophy and also a baby's temperament. So when I talk about that, I am pro sleep training in that there are so many methods, right? There are cry methods. There are cry methods that involve more crying. There are cry methods that require, you know, just more short bursts of crying. And then there are more gradual methods that involve the caregiver to be present for longer periods before they leave the room versus with cry methods. So when you look at all of the different methods, all of them is what I say are safe, right? When I say safe, there is no reason to believe from my education as a developmental expert and a pediatrician and a mom myself that any of these cause any sort of detriment for bonding, secure attachment, stress levels in children. And this goes from the research we currently have. Unfortunately, with sleep training, I don't think there's ever really going to be a perfect study because in order for there to be a perfect study, there can't be any other variables, right? So when you look at sleep training and if they're doing a sleep training study, the problem is that we have other things that make us a parent, right? How does that parent respond in other situations, not just for sleep training? What is the parent's philosophy? So it's really hard for us to say that is sleep training alone the reason why X, Y, and Z happens, or is it just an overall parenting philosophy? What I always remind parents to think about when they are deciding to sleep train is, one, are they medically allowed to do it? You have to ask your child's clinician, like, hey, is my child safe to be sleep trained or do I need to wait? Your child's clinician will look at the weight trends and say, you know what? Yeah, they're feeding great. Most pediatricians feel comfortable as long as we see steady weight gain. But the second question is, are you into it? Like, if you're not into it and you feel like, I don't know, I just don't want my baby to be trained on something that maybe they'll just do naturally, you don't have to train your baby to sleep. The reason why a lot of pediatricians are pro sleep training is because we know the benefit of sleep. And it's not because we're trying to force a baby into something. We know that, like, teaching a child to ride a bike, teaching your child to brush your teeth, tummy time, walking, crawling, swimming, these are all skills a child has to learn. And sometimes they're not going to love it, right? Sometimes they're going to be like, well, this is new. So sleep training is very similar, that when we're teaching a child to sleep, we're also teaching them that, you know what, you were doing this with me, or, you know, you needed my help, and that's awesome. I love you. But let's see now that you're old enough if I can teach you to do it on your own. And that is what that concept is. It's not a abandonment issue. It's a let's teach you a skill issue. And so when you ask me about cry methods, there's so many different cry methods. The ones that have been studied were ones that show gradual extinction, like short bursts, like 5 minutes, you go in, check in, 10 minutes, you go in and check in. These have been studied time and time again to have no effect on attachment. Secure attachment is the big thing, bonding, stress levels. And then there are other cry methods that involve longer periods of crying. And that, unfortunately, we don't have research to support either way. So it doesn't mean that it's a problem, but it doesn't mean that it's also perfect. We don't know, right? So it really goes down to a parent's choice. I also remind parents to look at the baby's temperament. For example, if your baby is easy to console, right? You put them down in a crib and they go down to sleep. A cry method may be okay for you because they may not cry a lot. But if your baby is really attached and you've been doing some, you know, a lot of cuddles, a lot of, you know, sleeping on you, co-sleeping, things like that, then maybe a cry method is not going to be what you go to because the baby might not be used to that, right? They were used to being a little closer to you. So it's important that families know the options. It's important that they don't feel guilty about doing it, because I can't stress it enough. The maternal and paternal mental health outcomes of a sleep trained baby are huge. I mean, we see this in studies. We see this just from clinical observation, tired parents that are in tears in my office. And I guide them and say, you know what? Let's talk about your options here. What do you feel? I don't want to do cry methods. Okay, so here are some methods that don't involve as much crying, but there are options. And it's important to balance what a parent's decision is, as well as what the child's temperament is, so that we can find the right method free of guilt.
You know, I love that, not just because I'm in the second week of sleep training my 6-month-old, but I talked about it in our check-in today. And it's interesting because with my first, I trained him at like 5 months. I couldn't wait to sleep train him, and it worked really great. I did one of those sort of graduated extinction methods, and it worked awesome. And for this baby, because I knew he was my last baby, unless something unexpected happens, but he's supposed to be my last baby, I kind of put it off because I wanted him closer for longer. You know, it was my choice, even though I was so sleep deprived.
Yeah.
But what was interesting for me is that listening to his temperament, it was almost like he was asking to be sleep trained. his sleep got so bad in the last couple weeks before I sleep trained. And it was like, woman, put me in my own crib. Like, give me the space. I'm sick of this pack and play in your room. Like,
yeah.
And it worked like magic. I mean, by day three, he was just putting himself to sleep without any crying, which I know is not everyone's case, but it worked great for him. So,
but you give a great example, because if you were told that you can't sleep train, right? Then you would have kept that baby in the room when they're telling you, hey, let me go, right? That's why we need to educate parents about options. It's not like you need to do this at a certain time. It's, hey, think about what you want. And my son was the same like yours. My son, if I went in the room, he would hate it. Meaning he didn't, the presence of us there caused him to cry more. Mm-hmm. So we actually didn't do graduated. We did a full cry method where we gave him a big kiss goodnight and we didn't see him till morning. And he didn't cry long. He cried for 10, 15, because anytime we went in, when we tried to do graduated, he would shriek and shriek and be like, what are you doing? And then finally we let it, we didn't go in and that's what did it. He was okay to do it on his own. And it's hard for a parent to read that, but you got to read your baby and say, you know what? My presence is actually making them more aggravated. And he wanted to go sleep on his own. And he's such an independent sleeper now. And every baby's so unique. And like you said, you kept him close. I think it's important to balance a paternal and maternal choice, but also looking at the baby's development. And sometimes it's hard to find and figure out in those first few months or, you know, the first year of life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's one thing that can really cause some anxieties in new parents. Another that has plagued both me and Laura is baby spit up and reflux. So I would love to ask about that. We've talked about it a lot on our show, and we want to know, what are the signs of reflux in a new baby? And at what point should a parent take action if they think their baby has reflux?
Oh, this is such a good one. And you're right. It causes a lot of anxiety because, I mean, it's really hard seeing your baby uncomfortable, and also you want to fix it. And from just a psychological standpoint, the gut and the brain are connected. So when your gut isn't going well, you're going to be more cranky, right? Mm-hmm. As a baby. I'm giving a prime example here. And if, even for an adult, the gut-brain axis is so key. So I see this, and I see that it affects the baby. Like, the baby's going to be more upset, but it also, there should be a gut-brain axis between the actual baby and then the gut-brain axis between the parent, because then it can cause the parent to get anxious. The parent can have nausea. The parent can have visceral symptoms because of that connection. It's a huge issue. Now, to answer your question, I want to kind of go into what spit up is. So babies do spit up. Most babies spit up. And what I mean by spit up is you feed them breast milk or formula and it just comes back up. Maybe, you know, most babies will have just a little bit, or a whole, you know, burp cloth will be spit up on. This is very normal and common for it to be just this happy spitter situation. This is a baby who spits up, goes back to feeding, playful, not very bothered by that spit up, not super uncomfortable, consolable, and is gaining weight. When we get into that non-happy spitter category, this is now getting into something called reflux, or GERD. GERD is gastroesophageal reflux disease. This is when the spit up has become so prominent that it's actually causing acid production in the esophagus, in the stomach lining, that's causing the baby to be irritated there. And this is a medical condition where we may need to do different things. So to answer that question of when do you seek medical advice, if your baby is spitting up and super uncomfortable, and you will know that, you'll be like, wow, I just, every time they feed, they're just arching their back, they're grimacing, you need to speak to your child's clinician. Blood in the poop with spit up, definitely a red flag we need to know about. Or if you feel like your baby's not gaining weight. So those are your three big things that you're looking at with spit up. If the baby is gaining weight, there's no blood, and is otherwise consolable, like, you know, you maybe fusses a little bit, but you can get them to sleep, they're sleeping, you know, stretches, you want to wait that out. Now, if they are having any of those red flags, your clinician will look at waking, they'll look at comfortability. And in that situation, they may make diet changes. If you're breastfeeding, they may say, let's avoid dairy and soy. If you're formula feeding, they may move you to another formula. They may start medicine. Typically, we start with diet modifications for severe spit up before we go to medicine, but every clinician has a different style. But it's important to kind of know that a lot of times we need to wait this out. And it is hard because it's 6-7 months of this sometimes. And it really can, I call it robbing joy. Like, it's one of those medical conditions that makes mothers and fathers miserable. I mean, they're so upset. They want their baby to be comfortable. They are just, the baby's up and, you know, not happy. And it's so hard to see. And, you know, I always have conversations with my families who have spit up. I'm like, let's talk about what we can do. Are you okay waiting it out? Do you trust me that we will do something if it's medically indicated? Because what I don't want is that baby's thriving and maybe we can deal with a little bit of the fuss, because I understand it's hard, before putting on medicine, before making too many changes, right? It is that sort of conversation that you want to have with your trusted clinician to help decide what is the best thing for baby and for you, because it is hard. I totally get that. I mean, I don't know about for you both, like when that got better or if it was so severe, but it really can be very tough. And, you know, like I said, rob a lot of joy as mothers.
Yeah, I'm currently going through it. Shauna had her second daughter had reflux that responded to Zantac, right, which is no longer prescribed. But my 6-month-old, he was sort of a borderline. It was like he was such a happy guy in general. I think it masked a lot of his discomfort. Mm-hmm. But he was doing really severe arching to the point where I figured out by Googling what Sandifer syndrome was, because I was like, what is going on with this kid? And his weight percentiles just plummeted. He was born in like 40th or 50th, I can't remember exactly, but in the 40s at least. And he got all the way down to 8th percentile. So we ended up putting him on a PPI, which has worked just wonders for him. He's now back up into like the 30 something percentile, and he's thriving, which is just so great to see, because it is, like you said, it's so hard to watch them. And this actually leads into our next question, which is about weight percentiles, because I think that's another issue that moms and new parents in general just get so fixated on. Like, not just whether the kid is staying on their curve, but also like, what percentile is my baby at? Like, what does it mean if my baby's at the 90th percentile? And what does it mean if my baby's at the 5th percentile? Is that bad? Is that good? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, percentile anxiety is also really real. And, you know, I'm in my office many times and they ask me how the baby's weight is going. And I always say how they trended from the last visit versus percentiles, unless they ask me, you know, directly, hey, can I see here the percentile? And I always frame it as the percentile is a trend versus a grade. Okay. So when you look at percentiles, yes, 90th percentile, what that means is that if you have a boy and your child's the 90th percentile, they weigh more than 90% of babies that are boys of that same age, okay? Same thing for 5th percentile. A 5th percentile girl would be bigger than 5% of girls that same exact age. Now, percentiles, the CDC curve is what we use in our offices. The CDC curve takes into account formula and breastfed babies across the country. But my issue with that is that it's really not representative of the individual genetics of a family, right? It's a ballpark. I understand that. But when you look at certain ethnicities, right? Certain ethnicities have certain body compositions, right? When you look at your family, you know, your family may have a certain body composition. So I don't think it's fair for us to look at it as a grade, because everyone is so unique, even within siblings, even within twins. So what's more important when you're looking at percentile is looking at how your child trended. You said it beautifully that your son had, you know, Sandifer syndrome, which is a, you know, component of reflux and turning their head like a torticollis or spasms of the neck. This is, you know, you saw that your child's weight was plummeting. Now, plummeting means, like an example, your child's on the 40th percentile and drops to the 10th. So when I look at plummeting, I'm looking at crossing two lines on that percentile graph. It doesn't mean automatic red flag, we need to do some major workup, but it's something that I have to have a major conversation with, like, hey, what's going on with feeding? Is the baby having any GI upset, diarrhea, blood? Is the baby spitting up, right? If it's an older child, what's going on with nutrition? What's going on with physical activity? So it's a conversation that needs to be, you know, had if we're seeing jumps going down or jumps going up. And so when you look at it, I want you to look at a trend and understand that there are going to be fluctuations, meaning 40th, 20th, 30th, 50th. I mean, I don't expect it to be always on the 40th, always on the 10th, if that's where they're trending. You're going to see fluctuations when they get sick. You're going to see fluctuations when they're starting solids. If a mom is breastfeeding, you know, at the beginning, you're going to see some fluctuations. And then you're also going to see it when they start doing motor skills, like crawling, walking, things like that. It's so important to look at that big picture, because that big picture is what's going to, you know, cue us into something actually being wrong, or is it something that we wait out? I'm going to be honest. I've been practicing for 7 years. I have yet to have a major percentile heart attack, meaning, oh my gosh, something's wrong, because I'm tracking this with the family. You know, obviously reflux is part of that, but I'm talking like some rare metabolic disorder, you know, that is so rare. But these things are, we're going to pick up and we're going to monitor. So it really comes down to looking at the big picture, how the child's developing. You know, I'm so glad, I know Enfamil brought you to me, because my role with Enfamil NeuroPro is to really educate families on that first year and that overall big picture, right? The development, the nutrition, all of that. So if we're feeling like something's off with nutrition, something's off with development, this is what I'm trying to educate families on, because it's important to look at that as a overall framework for our baby versus, oh my gosh, my baby's on the 40th. Does that mean that there's 60% of kids that are better than them? No. Mm-hmm. It just means your child is on the 40th. We got to look at your development. How are you doing cognitively, motor skills, language skills for that age, communication skills? That's what's so important to look at when you look at percentiles.
That's so reassuring. I think, you know, Shauna and I are both people who really like getting gold stars. And I think that, you know, when you're used to getting A pluses throughout mm-hmm. school, and then you have a kid and you don't even get a, you know, you see the percentile and you're like, wait, that would be a D. That doesn't work. We need to remember, it's not a grade.
Yes, exactly.
But you're so, I think that's why our generation cares about it so much. We've been raised to be very type A, like, and especially the people on social that I, you know, and I felt like that follow me, like, we're so type A. I am too. I mean, I am type A as they come, and it's, you know, I'm kind of out there now to educate families on the type A mentality I have, but putting it into context of pediatric health, right? Because I know the things we think about, right? Like I've been there. I know exactly, you know, like when those things fluctuate and you look at it and it's almost like you do like a little high five in your head, or you like do a little fist bump and you're like, yeah, you know, but looking at it as, how did my child look from the last time, right? Just say your child was the 20th percentile and they're now the 19th or 20th or 25th. Awesome. Like, that is a goal compared to your child, what they did at the last visit. And that is an A plus, right? That is awesome. And what's a bigger A plus is that you are learning and that you're doing the best for your baby. You know, you're learning about how to nourish their bodies with proper nutrition and how to develop their little brains. I mean, this is the A plus, right? Learning, educating, advocating. That's what I always want families to do.
Well, in that regard, Laura, I think that we are both earning A pluses, don't you?
Well, of course. I mean, how could we do any less?
That's right.
You guys get an A plus. I do. I'm giving you all the A plus right now.
Yay. Mona, your advice is so wonderful and so helpful. And I know you have so much more to give. And I know that you also have an amazing new guide out called the New Mom's Survival Guide. Can you speak to us about that and tell our listeners where they can find it?
Oh, thank you so much. So this is a labor of love, looking at everything we're talking about, but also just the things that mothers were coming into my office worried about, telling me that, why doesn't anyone talk about this? Like, do I feel like I'm the only one going through this? So I created a course that is a little bit empowerment, a little bit education, and a little bit community. So the empowerment piece is reminding moms to take care of themselves. At every visit, I go over a roadmap on what you're going to expect at every visit, with video modules on what's going to happen, handouts on all of your questions. And then I also remind you what that means for you, the feelings that you may be feeling when your baby is starting to walk, or when your child starts solids, or when, you know, you're having a difficult time with your body image. Like, I go through all of the things that I've heard moms talk to me about. Even though I'm a pediatrician, I am a fellow mom. And then the education piece is how-tos, motivation, just ways to navigate that first year. And the community is a Facebook group where you can troubleshoot ideas. And this was just something that I felt like was lacking in the educational course space for that baby's first year. And I talk about everything. Like, there's a lot of courses that talk about breastfeeding, but I also talk about formula. I also talk about, well, what if you need to supplement formula? What if you only want to do formula feeding? So I break up everything in terms of puree, baby-led weaning, sleep training. If you're not sleep training, I talk about just foundation of sleep, to really allow any mom who just wants to learn and find out what's best for them and their baby. So it's so exciting. It launches on the 30th of August. So your listeners are probably able to get access to that now. And you can visit pedsdoctalk.com. That's the same as my Instagram, for more information.
That's so great. I'm really looking forward to checking that out. I think it's going to be a great resource for our listeners, who I think we have something like 75% of our listeners are either pregnant TTC or new moms. So that is a great resource for them. And we just want to say thank you so much for coming on our show. We're actually going to be recording a separate bonus episode with you. But for this show, we just have one more question, which is the question we ask all of our guests, which is, do you have a big fat positive you want to share with our listeners?
The big fat positive is my course. I mean, I can't express how excited I am about it. I know anyone who creates something is going to love it. But I mean, my husband has been watching me work on this thing day in and day out. And he's just like so excited for me to share this with the world because of just how detailed, but non-overwhelming and supportive. And it just gives me all of those big fat positive feels because I'm just so excited. And like you said, I just feel like it's going to be so helpful to so many in that non-judgy, loving way that I do a lot of my educational content with. So thank you.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I love that. I love that you worked so hard on it and it's coming out in the world and so many people are going to benefit from it. Again, listeners, you can find Dr. Mona on Instagram at PedsDocTalk and her podcast of the same name or visit PedsDocTalk.com to find her new mom survival guide. Thanks again, Dr. Mona.
Thank you for having me. This was wonderful.
So, Shauna, that interview was amazing, but I think we need to take a quick break and then come back with our BFPs and BFNs for the week.
I think we should. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. There's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor, and I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important, and therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners, this episode is proudly brought to you by L'Olivie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With L'Olivie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter L'Olivie's bestsellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at L'Olivie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
L'Olivie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at L'Olivie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at L-O-L-A-V-I-E.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
We're back and we wrap up every episode with our weekly BFPs and BFNs. Laura, you're up first this week. So I want to know, do you have a BFP or a BFN?
So I have a BFP. It's actually two BFPs. They're two different books that I got to help prep Augie for his preschool experience.
Ooh.
And more specifically, to prep him from being separated from me and Corey. So the two books are The Kissing Hand by Audrey Penn and The Invisible String by Patrice Karst, K-A-R-S-T. Mm-hmm. Have you read either of these?
No, I've heard of them, though. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
So The Invisible String is like a little story of two little twins who get scared in the middle of the night and run out to their mommy. And the mommy tells a story about how there's an invisible string that connects everyone who loves each other. And it just goes through iterations like, is there a string that connects me and you? Is there a string that connects me and my sister? You know, like all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And warning, it does have like the unintentional crying bit where it's like, does the string extend all the way up to heaven? Did Uncle Brian or whatever his name is, and it's like, yes, even there, and it's like, it's so sad, but it's a really great book, and it really helped Augie understand, I feel like, that physical distance doesn't diminish, you know, our connection. And he, you know, kept talking about the invisible string, and I kept reminding him that when he was at school, if you felt a little tug on his chest, that's me tugging on the invisible string that connects us. And so I think that sunk in a bit for him. And then The Kissing Hand is about a mommy raccoon and a baby raccoon and the bait, well, or a kid raccoon, I should say, and the kid raccoon going to school for the first time. And in the book, the mommy kisses the hand of the baby, like on the palm, and says, like, you know, if you are ever feeling lonely, you know, I have a kiss in your hand and you can just hold it to your chest and you can feel the kiss or whatever. Like, I'm doing a bad job, which is why you should get the book. But it's just another like little thing you can do. And I've heard that people will just do that. So like they'll read the book, they'll get the kid used to the book, and then they'll like kiss the palm of each other's hand. So you can always have, you know, the kiss with you for the day.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's super sweet. The only thing is Corey brought up one little gripe, which is that the baby raccoon goes to school at night because they're nocturnal. And he's like, why? Like, he's like, this is such a good book to prep kids. But it's like, well, we wait until nighttime and then we go to school. And it's like, that's confusing.
Yeah.
But it's still cute. I still recommend it. So that's The Kissing Hand by Audrey Penn. And both of them have really beautiful illustrations and just good if you're looking for something to help prep a kid for school and or just being separated.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to have to get those for sure because we are getting Cece mentally ready for preschool in a couple weeks. So
That's right.
We're going to need something similar. We've been reading a book called Preschool Here I Come by DJ Steinberg. And that's a really fun one, too. They also have one for kindergarten, which we read with Elle. And it's a collection of poems about what goes on in a preschool classroom. And there's stickers at the end, which is, you know, the most exciting thing of all. Like, girls get to get stickers and put them all over the book. But that's a fun one, too, for getting your kids ready for preschool.
You know, Augie just does not care about stickers. Like, he thinks they're fine. Like, but he's just not motivated by them at all.
To each their own.
I guess.
He loves his trucks. And my girls have so many trucks that just sit unused. Like, I should just give them to Augie.
No, please don't.
You don't need more trucks in your house, Laura?
That is literally the last thing we need.
All right.
Okay, how about you? Do you have a BFP or a BFN?
I have a little bit of a BFN this week.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, I was talking about how I got my fancy new IUD, and the process of getting it in was, of course, horrifying, but it was in and it was fine and everything's been okay. And this week, I have not been feeling great. Like, I've been feeling off in a couple different ways and trying to figure out why. And at one point, I was like, you know, I don't know. They say you should like check for your IUD strings because who knows what could happen after it gets inserted, right? You're supposed to go back in a few weeks to have the placement checked. And who knows, it could move or whatever. And I'm like, maybe something's going on with that to kind of make me feel like nauseous or whatever. And so I'm like, all right, I guess I'll like check for these strings. And I'm like, I go and check and I'm like, I don't think I feel anything. And I messaged you immediately, of course.
Yeah.
And I was like, how obvious are IUD strings? And I don't know. I don't remember. What did you say?
Yeah. I mean, I said pretty obvious. So, you know, I've had four of them now. And I'd say it kind of feels like fishing line in my experience. Mm-hmm. And for me, mine tend to like curl up and sort of like hang out around my cervix like a little cat's tail, if you will. it's obvious once you feel it for me, but like I do have to sort of dig around a little, if you will. Like, definitely have to get into a deep squat in order to feel it. But once I get to it, it's like, oh yeah, there it is. Like there's no question. So that's the last I heard.
Yeah.
You asked me, and I actually resisted following up because I figured you either didn't want to tell me you found it or you were waiting to give me an update when we recorded.
Well, I couldn't really feel it. And I was definitely doing some digging, like should be watching my kids. But instead, I'm in the bathroom digging around for some IUD strings. And when I had gotten it inserted, the doctor like had me feel the strings like outside my body. She's like, this is what they are. Like, look at them, feel them. Like, this is what it will feel like. So I kind of had the impression it would feel like fishing line or whatever. I'm like, I don't know, man. I really don't know. So I posted in one of my parenting groups and I was like, how obvious are these strings? And everyone's like, I don't know, you know, give or take, whatever. And by like day three, I'm like, I don't know. I'm not feeling great. I'm not feeling these strings. I don't think so. I guess I should make an appointment with my doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to the doctor and she's like, oh, yeah, you know, they can get curled up around your cervix. Sometimes they're not obvious. And, you know, she's like, it's not a big deal. And she opens me up. She's like, oh, yeah, nope. I don't see those strings anywhere.
What?
I'm like, what? What happened? Where is it?
Oh,
I'm just like, my IUD is missing, okay? This is where I'm left hanging.
No.
She's like, I don't. She also, this was the nurse practitioner, not the person who inserted it. So this is the second person who's looked at my cervix in this office. And she's like, gosh, you have such a small little tight cervix. I'm like, I know. Everyone's talked about that.
My cervix is the talk of the office. I know.
Right? All the rage. And she's like, I don't think you expelled the IUD. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so either. I think I would know if a device came shooting out of me. But I don't know. Apparently, sometimes it can happen. So I'm like, I don't.
Well, especially when you have such a tight cervix. Like, you're not going to be spitting an IUD out if you had to get lidocaine to dilate it. That's my thought, at least.
That's what I'm thinking, too. But it's left hanging in the balance now. I don't know.
Oh, you still don't know?
I don't know, because she was like, all right, I'm going to talk to the doctor about it and see what I want you to do. And she went and talked to the doctor and the doctor's like, I want you to get an ultrasound to see where your IUD is and what's going on with it. And she sent me out, like she referred me out to a radiology place. I don't know if they don't do ultrasounds at her office. I switched over to someone who just does gynecology, not obstetrics.
Oh,
and so now I have to wait 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
To get an ultrasound to find out what's going on. And in the meantime, of course, I'm Googling and I'm like, oh my God, this thing has probably perforated my bowels. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just thinking of worst case scenarios. And so I'm just left not sure what's going on, but definitely there's no strings.
That's so frustrating and weird. I mean, like, it probably just kind of got out of place and the strings moved up. And I mean, I don't know, but it's crazy that you didn't get an ultrasound like then and there.
I know.
At my OB's office, and again, he's an OB, so he's used to doing this, but it's just like, let's just take a look-see. And like, like the, you know, that transvaginal ultrasound is just always at the ready. So I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah, I'm really bummed that I switched to the new doctor now that I've gone through all this, because my old doctor would have been the same. Like, let's just take a look right now and find out. And so now, I don't know. I called so many radiology places and everyone's booked out for at least 2 weeks.
Ugh.
So I don't know.
That's awful. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Well, I hope it's something simple and nothing bad. And like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of hope you just expelled it, even though you didn't, like, it seems unlikely, because then you don't have to get it out again. But
I know.
It seems unlikely.
It seems unlikely. I don't know what's going on, but I will keep you updated for
what
sure.
A pain. All right. Well, I'm so sorry about that.
Thanks.
But I do think that's the end of our show.
It is. Yes, it is. So listeners, if you've had your IUD go missing, please let me know what happened. How's it going? I need some listener stories here. So please reach out. Laura, where can they reach us?
We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at BFP Podcast. We have a website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com. If you want to send us an email, just send it to contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com. And don't forget, you can always include a voice memo into that email. We love those. Finally, if you want to join the most awesome group of people on the internet, just search Facebook for Big Fat Positive Community, request to join, answer the 2 membership questions, and we'll send you straight through and you can join in on all the awesome conversations we're having in there.
If you love our show, please rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts and spread the word. Let your friends know about BFP. Our show is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.